abomination. The totality of that knowledge weakened her. The pre-born did not escape. Still, she'd fought against the more terrifying of her ancestors, winning for a time a Pyrrhic victory which had lasted through childhood. She'd known a private personality, but it had no immunity against casual intrusions from those who lived their reflected lives through her. "Thus will I be one day," she thought. This thought chilled her. To walk and dissemble through the life of a child from her own loins, intruding, grasping at consciousness to add a quantum of experience. Fear stalked her childhood. It persisted into puberty. She had fought it, never asking for help. Who would understand the help she required? Not her mother, who could never quite drive away that specter of Bene Gesserit judgment. The pre-born were abomination. There had come that night when her brother walked alone into the desert seeking death, giving himself to Shai Hulud as blind Fremen were supposed to do. Within the month, Alia had been married to Paul Swordmaster, Duncan Idaho, a Mentat brought back from the dead by the arts of the Tlaalaxu. Her mother fled back to Caladan. Paul's twins were Alia's legal charge. And she controlled the regency. Pressures of responsibility had driven the old fears away, and she had been wide open to the inner lives, demanding their advice, plunging into spice trance in search of guiding visions. The crisis came on a day like many others in the spring month of Lab, a clear morning at Muad'Dib's keep with a cold wind blowing down from the pole. Alia still wore the yellow for mourning, the color of the sterile sun. More and more these past few weeks she'd been denying the inner voice of her mother, who tended to sneer at preparation for the coming holy days to be centered on the temple. The inner awareness of Jessica faded, sinking away at last with a faceless demand that Alia would be better occupied working on the Atreides Law. New lives began to clamor for their moment of consciousness. Alia felt that she had opened a bottomless pit, and faces arose out of it like a swarm of locusts, until she came at last to focus on one who was like a beast, the old Baron Harkonnen. In terrified outrage, she had screamed out against all of that inner clamor, winning a temporary silence. On this morning, Alia took her pre-breakfast walk through the keep's roof garden. In a new attempt to win the inner battle, she tried to hold her entire awareness within Choda's admonition to the Zensuni, "Leaving the ladder, one may fall upward." But morning's glow along the cliffs of the shield wall kept distracting her. Plantings of resilient fuzzgrass filled the garden's pathways. When she looked away from the shield wall, she saw dew on the grass, the catch of all the moisture which had passed here in the night. It reflected her own passage as of a multitude. That multitude made her giddy. Each reflection carried the imprint of a face from the inner multitude. She tried to focus her mind on what the grass implied. The presence of plentiful dew told her how far the ecological transformation had progressed on Arrakis. The climate of these northern latitudes was growing warmer. Atmospheric carbon dioxide was on the increase. She reminded herself how many new hectares would be put under green plants in the coming year, and it required 37,000 cubic feet of water to irrigate just one hectare. Despite every attempt at mundane thoughts, she could not drive away the shark-like circling of all those others within her. She put her hands to her forehead and pressed. Her temple guards had brought her a prisoner to judge at sunset the previous day, one Essos Payman, a dark little man, ostensibly in the pay of a house miner, the Nibiros, who traded in holy artifacts and small manufactured items for decoration. Actually, Payman was known to be a Chome spy, whose task was to assess the yearly spice crop. Alia had been on the point of sending him into the dungeons when he'd protested loudly, "The injustice of the Atreides!" That could have brought him an immediate sentence of death on the hanging tripod, but Alia had been caught by his boldness. She'd spoken sternly from her throne of judgment, trying to frighten him into revealing more than he'd already told her inquisitors. "Why are our spice crops of such interest to the Combine Onet?" she demanded. "Tell us, and we may spare you."
"I only collect something for which there is a market," Payman said. "I know nothing of what is done with my harvest."
"And for this petty profit, you interfere with our royal plans?" Alia demanded.
"Royalty never considers that we might have plans, too," he countered.
Alia, captivated by his desperate audacity, said,
"Essos Payman, will you work for me?"
At this, a grin whitened his dark face, and he said,
"You were about to obliterate me without a qualm. What is my new value that you should suddenly make a market for it?"
"You've a simple and practical value," she said. "You're bold, and you're for hire to the highest bidder. I can bid higher than any other in the Empire."
At which he named a remarkable sum which he required for his services.
But Alia laughed and counted with a figure she considered more reasonable, and undoubtedly far more than he'd ever before received. She added,
"And, of course, I throw in the gift of your life, upon which, I presume, you place an even more inordinate value."
"A bargain!" Payman cried, and at a signal from Alia, was led away by her priestly master of appointments, Ziarenko Javid.
Less than an hour later, as Alia prepared to leave the judgment hall, Javid came hurrying to report that Payman had been overheard to mutter the fateful lines from the Orange Catholic Bible,
"Maleficos non patieris vivere."
"Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live," Alia translated. So that was his gratitude.
He was one of those who plotted against her very life. In a flush of rage, such as she'd never before experienced, she ordered Payman's immediate execution, sending his body to the temple death still, where his water, at least, would be of some value in the priestly coffers. And all night long, Payman's dark face haunted her. She tried all of her tricks against this persistent accusing image, reciting the bougie from the Fremen Book of Krios.
"Nothing occurs! Nothing occurs!"
But Payman took her through a wearing night into this giddy new day, where she could see that his face had joined those in the jeweled reflections from the dew. A female guard called her to breakfast from the roof door behind a low hedge of mimosa. Alia sighed. She felt small choice between hells, the outcry within her mind, or the outcry from her attendants. All were pointless voices, but persistent in their demands, hourglass noises that she would like to silence with the edge of a knife. Ignoring the guard, Alia stared across the roof garden toward the shield wall. A bahada had left its broad outwash like a detrital fan upon the sheltered floor of her domain. The delta of sand spread out before her gaze, outlined by the morning sun. It came to her that an uninitiated eye might see that broad fan as evidence of a river's flow, but it was no more than the place where her brother had shattered the shield wall with the Atreides family atomics, opening a path from the desert for the sandworms which had carried his Fremen troops to shocking victory over his imperial predecessor, Shaddam IV. Now a broad canal flowed with water on the shield wall's far side to block off sandworm intrusions. Sandworms would not cross open water. It poisoned them.
"Would that I had such a barrier within my mind," she thought.
The thought increased her giddy sensation of being separated from reality.
"Sandworms! Sandworms!"
Her memory presented a collection of sandworm images. Mighty Shai-Hulud, the demiurge of the Fremen, deadly beast of the desert's depths whose outpourings included the priceless spice. How odd it was, this sandworm, to grow from a flat and leathery sand trout, she thought. They were like the flocking multitude within her awareness. The sand trout, when linked edge to edge against the planet's bedrock, formed living cisterns. They held back the water that their sandworm vector might live. Alia could feel the analogy. Some of those others within her mind held back dangerous forces which could destroy her. Again, the guard called her to breakfast, a note of impatience apparent. Angrily, Alia turned, waved a dismissal signal. The guard obeyed, but the roof door slammed. At the sound of the slamming door, Alia felt herself caught by everything she had attempted to deny. The other lives welled up within her like a hideous tide. Each demanding life pressed its face against her vision centers, a cloud of faces. Some presented mange-spotted skin, others were callous and full of sooty shadows. There were mouths like moist lozenges. The pressure of the swarm washed over her in a current which demanded that she float free and plunge into them.
"No," she whispered. "No, no, no."
She would have collapsed onto the path but for a bench beside her, which accepted her sagging body. She tried to sit, could not, stretched out on the cold plasteel, still whispering denial. The tide continued to rise within her. She felt attuned to the slightest show of attention, aware of the risk, but alert for every exclamation from those guarded mouths which clamored within her. They were a cacophony of demand for her attention.
"Me! Me! No, me!"
And she knew that if she once gave her attention, gave it completely, she would be lost. To behold one face out of the multitude, and follow the voice of that face, would be to be held by the egocentrism which shared her existence.
"Prescience does this to you," a voice whispered.
She covered her ears with her hands, thinking,
"I'm not prescient. The trance doesn't work for me."
But the voice persisted.
"It might work if you had help." "No, no," she whispered.
Other voices wove around her mind.
"I, Agamemnon, your ancestor, demand audience."
"No, no."
She pressed her hands against her ears until the flesh answered her with pain. An insane cackle within her head asked,
"What has become of Ovid? Simple, he's John Bartlett's Ibid."
The names were meaningless in her extremity. She wanted to scream against them and against all the other voices, but could not find her own voice. Her guard, sent back to the roof by senior attendants, peered once more from the doorway behind the mimosa, saw Alia on the bench, spoke to a companion.
"Ah, she is resting. You noted that she didn't sleep well last night. It is good for her to take the Zaha, the morning siesta."
Alia did not hear her guard. Her awareness was caught by shrieks of singing.
"Merry old birds are we, hurrah!"
The voices echoed against the inside of her skull, and she thought,
"I'm going insane. I'm losing my mind."
Her feet made feeble fleeing motions against the bench. She felt that if she could only command her body to run, she might escape. She had to escape, lest any part of that inner tide sweep her into silence, forever contaminating her soul. But her body would not obey. The mightiest forces in the Imperial universe would obey her slightest whim, but her body would not. An inner voice chuckled. Then,
"From one viewpoint, child, each incident of creation represents a catastrophe."
It was a basso voice which rumbled against her eyes, and again that chuckle as though deriding its own pontification.
"My dear child, I will help you, but you must help me in return."
Against the swelling background clamor behind that basso voice, Alia spoke through chattering teeth.
"Who? Who?"
A face formed itself upon her awareness. It was a smiling face of such fatness that it could have been a baby's, except for the glittering eagerness of the eyes. She tried to pull back, but achieved only a longer view which included the body attached to that face. The body was grossly, immensely fat, clothed in a robe which revealed by subtle bulges beneath it that this fat had required the support of portable suspensors.
"You see," the basso voice rumbled, "it is only your maternal grandfather. You know me. I was the Baron Vladimir Harkonnen."
You're dead," she gasped.
"But of course, my dear, most of us within you are dead. But none of the others are really willing to help you. They don't understand you."
"Go away," she pleaded. "Oh, please go away."
"But you need help, granddaughter," the Baron's voice argued.
"How remarkable he looks," she thought, watching the projection of the Baron against her closed eyelids.
"I'm willing to help you," the Baron wheedled. "The others in here would only fight to take over your entire consciousness. Any one of them would try to drive you out. But me, I want only a little corner of my own."
Again the other lives within her lifted their clamor. The tide once more threatened to engulf her, and she heard her mother's voice screeching, and Alia thought,
"She's not dead."
"Shut up," the Baron commanded.
Alia felt her own desires reinforcing that command, making it felt throughout her awareness. Inner silence washed through her like a cool bath, and she felt her hammering heart begin slowing to its normal pace. Soothingly, the Baron's voice intruded,
"You see? Together we're invincible. You help me, and I help you."
What do you want?" she whispered.
A pensive look came over the fat face against her closed eyelids.
"Ah, my darling granddaughter," he said. "I wish only a few simple pleasures. Give me but an occasional moment of contact with your senses. No one else need ever know. Let me feel but a small corner of your life when, for example, you are enfolded in the arms of your lover. Is that not a small price to ask?"
Yes.
"Good, good," the Baron chortled. "In return, my darling granddaughter, I can serve you in many ways. I can advise you, help you with my counsel. You will be invincible within and without. You will sweep away all opposition. History will forget your brother and cherish you. The future will be yours."
"You won't let the others take over?"
"They cannot stand against us. Singly, we can be overcome, but together we command. I will demonstrate. Listen."
And the Baron fell silent, withdrawing his image, his inner presence. Not one memory, face, or voice of the other lives intruded. Alia allowed herself a trembling sigh. Accompanying that sigh came a thought.